couple of women running things.
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to open the meeting of the Joint Implementation Committee for Measure 91 on this March 4th, 2015. Welcome. This is an exciting transition for our committee in that we are having some public hearings on actual bills. So it's a pivot point for us, and we're going to open three different public hearings in succession, and welcome testimony. We have folks signed up, but if you haven't yet signed up, you can do that over with the committee assistant.
And members, where do we sign up?
And members, yes, will have a special sign-up sheet.
You want to talk to?
Oh, I guess I better say something about those bills.
All right, so I'm going to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 542 and ask Adam to summarize the bill. Take it away, Adam.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Senate Bill 542 has repealed sections of Measure 91 prohibiting local government from taxing and regulating marijuana. States that local governments can adopt ordinances that regulate, restrict, prohibit, or impose taxes on marijuana, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage. We have neither a revenue nor a fiscal statement for this bill.
Okay, can people hear that okay, or should we next time through get a little closer to the microphone or project even more? Yes, vigorous yeses from the back. Thank you. All right, then. Adam, oh, good, okay. All right, oh, my.
Bill is hot.
So our first witness is Scott Winkles from LOC. I think I'd like to call up, what do you think, should I do three with me?
I'm not big on regular.
Okay, let's have Rob Bovet and Scott Winkles come to the front. And you are seasoned expert at this, but please, of course, start by stating your name for the record. Welcome. And then on deck, we'll have David Bedanke, and Doug Hoyer, and Avery Smith.
I don't know. I think it's Scott.
All right. Thank you. Welcome.
Madam Co-Chair, as members of the committee, for the record, my name is Scott Winkles, and I represent the League of Oregon Cities. The League of Oregon Cities is an association of all 242 incorporated cities in the state of Oregon, and I'm here in support of Senate Bill 542. And Madam Co-Chair, thank you for your comments, referring to me as a seasoned expert, but I'm going to ask the committee to bear with me in that I've never used PowerPoint in a testimony before. So I indulge your patience. Senate Bill 542 we regard as a somewhat simple concept in that it allows local control in the area of recreational marijuana and commercial marijuana. The bill would ensure that cities have the authority to adopt their own local ordinances in regards to the regulation of marijuana. It would allow cities to ensure that cities have a clear way to opt out of participating in commercial marijuana activities, and it would allow taxation of marijuana sales. This is an important issue for the League of Oregon Cities. The League exists to protect the rights of city councils, elected city councils, to govern their cities. We haven't approached this issue any differently than we would any other topic that's before the legislature. Cities will feel the brunt of implementation in a way the state won't. Cities have been forced to rely on state agencies to close problem liquor establishments in the past historically to profound disappointment. The cities are going to be the ones who hear the complaints from neighbors. Cities are going to be the ones, their police departments have been asked by the OLCC and told by the OLCC that their cooperation will be integral to the successful implementation of Measure 91. With that, I would also like to now sort of transition and sort of explain the city of Kirkland, Washington's efforts. Look what happened there in Kirkland when retail marijuana was slated to operate in their city. Explain their experience, and I think it shows very clearly why cities are asking for this authority.
Mr. Winkles, I'm going to jump in and encourage you to project even more if you can, because I think for the people who are not facing you, it may be a little hard to hear. I am a bit hard of hearing myself, so I try to be vigilant on behalf of those
people. I apologize. I'm never sure which mics in the hearing rooms are all different. So what's before you now is a list of all the precincts in the city of Kirkland, Washington. What you'll see is you'll see that there was strong support in the city of Kirkland for their legalization. There's a map as well. It passed by 62%.
Maybe there. Forward.
There. Okay. My apologies. Here's a map of the precincts, and I want to draw your attention specifically to this Market Street area, this Market neighborhood right there. You'll see that it passed by greater than 65% in that neighborhood. This is a zoning map of the city of Kirkland, Washington, and these are, and again, we'll look at that neighborhood area, and this is a zone of commercial, some office commercial there, and again, that's an area where it passed by a large margin. And the shaded areas are all the buffers that were imposed by their legalization measure. So anything that's shaded, it might be eligible commercial, but because of the buffers, the 1,000-foot rules and their industrial areas, their areas that was, or their proximity to school and other things, those were prohibited. And again, here we have that Market area. What's interesting about that Market Street area is, again, it was in the precincts it was going to be located. That was basically, when they started, that was the only area in the city that was appropriate for its use because of the buffer zones, because of the existing commercial zoning. Neighbors in the community, even though they had voted for legalization, showed precious little interest in having a retail establishment open in that neighborhood. And it was not only did they pass it by a large margin, the precincts next to it, adjacent to it, passed legalization by a fairly large margin, although not as high. This is the sort of issue a city's going to be faced, is that we're going to be looking at having to work with our neighbors, who we anticipate in many cases will object rather strongly to having retail commercial activities going on in their neighborhoods, even though they may have supported the end of prohibition. So having the flexibility to address legal regulations, adopt clear time, place, manner restrictions, and in some cases prohibit until such time as they can work out the appropriate ordinance and charter changes to their cities, in order to meet the needs of their and the wishes of their constituents. It may not be logical that a city that passed legalization by 62% is unable to, for political reasons, locate two retail marijuana shops in their cities. And to this date, there is still no retail marijuana establishments in the city of Kirkland, Washington. This has dominated their conversations. The city of Kirkland, this is not the most important thing that location is doing. They still have to do their comprehensive plan updates and all the other issues cities are required to do. This is why we need, and additionally, this is why we need the finance piece in local taxation. According to the LRO estimates, cities are expected to receive approximately $2 million a year after this program is up and running, and considerably less in the first year while the program is established. Law enforcement costs, staff planning time, legal time, it will add up. $2 million split among 242 cities simply doesn't pay the bills for this. And again, cities in Oregon are expected to be active participants in helping this program succeed. To do that, we will need that flexibility in regulation and in taxation and into the ability to prohibit in a way that's not going to spark litigation. Again, and finally, I think I will turn that Mr. Bovet can speak more clearly to the issues of opt-out. But I would urge you to respect your city councils as we move forward, and their ability, and the fact that they are the ones who are going to have bear the brunt of local on-the-ground implementation as we move forward.
Thank you.
Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rob Ovette, legal counsel for the Association of Oregon Counties. I'm going to give you a completely different reason for making sure that we have complete local control. And it's a legal reason, not a policy reason. We can hear all kinds of policy reasons why there shouldn't be local control, but I'm going to give you kind of the legal outline. And I have provided you with basically a new legal opinion, a joint legal opinion from LOC and AOC, an 8-page opinion, that basically puts all the flesh on the bones from what I shared with you about 2 weeks ago about our interpretation of Measure 91, how we believe it's not preemptive, it's less than clear that Sean O'Day and myself are going to wind up in litigation. I appreciate the Rob Ovette Sean O'Day Full Employment Act, which is what Measure 91 is, but frankly, I prefer to work with you than be in court. So we'd like you to clean it up. But there's a legal reason why I think you just don't want to go down this path in terms of cleaning it up by making preemption clear. And that is this. As I explained to you a couple of weeks ago, keep in mind that these provisions out of Measure 91 and many others were adopted virtually lock, stock, and barrel out of the Oregon Liquor Control Act of 1933. That came quickly on the heels of federal repeal of prohibition. There's a problem with applying that to marijuana. The feds have not yet repealed prohibition. So some of those things fit like a square peg in a round hole, and this is one of them. This is why every state so far, including Colorado and Washington, have ensured local control, whether it's through constitutional provision, statutory provision, or case law. If we box, I suspect, one of his members rather than my members into a corner and force them to have one of the four categories or all four categories of medical retail businesses, I believe they're going to go to federal court, get an injunction, and I believe our entire licensing scheme is at risk. And so we can build this careful train, this beautiful train of licensing, regulation, and taxation, send it down the tracks, and have it derailed shortly because we will have done something that no other state has attempted to do, which is do what the case law tells us not to do. Force someone to take a business that is essentially, whether we like it or not, a federal crime. And so I would urge you strongly to clean up Measure 91. Maybe Senate Bill 542 is the right way to do that. Maybe there's other ways to do it. We can finesse it and talk about it, maybe have a special work group. But I wanted to provide you, and the League wanted to provide you with our full legal analysis. This is the Rob Ovette and Sean O'Day Full Employment Act. And this is what we're doing with House Bill 3460 right now, and we just rather not. We'd rather have you make the policy decisions. And I also strongly urge you to consult with legislative counsel. Don't take our word for it. Consult with legislative counsel. Seek your lawyer's advice as to what you ought to be doing with regard to opt-out and local control. I suspect, without knowing, that they might advise you not to play this, what I would characterize as this kind of game of high-stakes legal chicken. It doesn't serve anyone well.
Thank you. Senator Przanski.
Thanks. Rob, I appreciate your perspective. We've worked for many years over these many issues. But at the same time, hearing what you're putting on the table now, what guarantee, if any, do we have as the state that none of your members or none of us, Scott's members, are going to do their own thing if we even believe that there is an issue to go down the path that you two want us to go?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Przanski, so far the experience, for example, in the state of Washington or the state of Colorado or even any of the states with medical marijuana dispensaries, and there are quite a number of them, because the case law or the Constitution, the statute, preserve local control and local opt-out, none of those states have boxed any of their equivalent members into a corner. So there's been no reason for any of those cities or counties in any of those other states, many of them, to go to federal court and seek an injunction striking down any licensing scheme. And this comes to the difference between what the case law tells you about. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but really, as your Legislative Council laid out on the very first day. There is a sliding scale of things that are dangerous and safe. What is absolutely safe for you to do is to grant exemptions from state criminal law. That is 100% safe. Congress can't touch you. It's beyond the reach of Congress. You can. That's what the heart of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act and Measure 91 do. They decriminalize things under state law. What is very dangerous for you to do is to try to use state law to force some entity, whether it's an employer, a city, or county, to do something they don't want to do. So a licensing scheme inherently is risky. So what we want to ensure to avoid putting any of our members in a box is to ensure that, yes, we can force them to accept the fact that the personal allowance provisions of the Medical Marijuana Act and Measure 91, they can't touch. So people are entitled to that, period, the end. That's 100% within your purview, I believe, under the case law. What is really hazardous is when we try to force entities to accept a business that essentially is, again, we can disagree with the policy, still to this day committing a federal crime.
Follow up?
Yes, please.
Again, I'm going to ask, what guarantees, if any, can you give us that that won't still happen?
Co-chairs and Senator Przanski, there's no guarantees other than I think the risk goes way down when we provide for clean opt-out, because we've seen none of those issues crop up yet to fruition in the other states that have avoided what I call the nuclear issue.
Madam Co-chair, if I may.
You may, then a follow-up.
Sure, and then Representative Buckley.
The League endorsed, as you're aware, Senate Bill or House Bill 3460, which created the medical dispensary program because we thought the system we had was a non-system that didn't work. None of my members suggested any sort of legal action when that happened. The only reason Cave Junction only went down the route they did after the mandate, the discussion of the mandate was in place, and that's what led them to go down, and Medford also to go down that route. With a clear opt-out, there's no motive for them to seek a federal injunction. And I think from the perspective of the League, I think it could be chaotic were that to happen. And I just haven't, based on what happened before after 3460, I don't see any motivation for a city to go down that fairly expensive legal route. I think when we start talking about mandates and they're facing pushback from residents, then we sort of vector them going seeking that option.
Yeah, and so, Scott, I guess I'm going to have to come back because there was a moratorium that was put in place for 3460. Handshakes were done. Everyone agreed that this was going to be the way we're going to go forward. But lo and behold, guess what? Someone went to court because they didn't like having the moratorium for whatever reason. So that's just a comment. I guess the other part on this, the measure that was passed by the voters of this state specifically calls for a process for a city or a county to have a dry county or dry city. So the provision's already there in 91. Why don't we allow the people to have their say through that process, because that's what they supported?
And Madam Co-Chairs and Senator Przanski, I guess I would disagree with that characterization, and that's what this is about, because this explains the history of that statute. And under the Oregon Liquor Control Act, which has that very statute, the case law is very clear that that is not the exclusive method of opt-out. That was put in there to ensure the people's power of opt-out, frankly, in spite of city councils, or opting in. So the statute provides for going dry or going wet by initiative, and that's what Measure 91 does. But Measure 91 nowhere, much like the Oregon Liquor Control Act, says that's the exclusive method. And the history and the case law tell us that when it comes to liquor, cities and counties opted in and out based on both city council and county commissioner action as well as local initiative action.
Thank you.
Representative Buckley.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm following the same line as Senator Przanski. Given that there is an opt-out provision, why would a city or county choose to go down what you described as the costly path of federal legal action, and instead of allowing their voters to make the decision for their city or county.
And co-chairs and Representative Buckley, I think that might be, obviously, I think the safest course is to do 542. I think there's another potential mechanism, and that would be this, to allow a clean referral of opt-in or opt-out to the voters by city councils and county commissioners on a May or November election, rather than the funky initiative process, because we may not have people bothering. Let's give you an example. We may have a city that has a massive mandate against retail marijuana based on just the vote for Measure 91. I can think of a couple, right? Far East. And nobody's going to bother with the initiative process because nobody wants it. And so the Measure 91 doesn't, that statute isn't saying county commissioners and board or city councils, you can refer it. I think they can. I think they can refer such a thing. But it would be nice to have legislation that really sets all that stuff out. If this legislature really wants to say there shall be no opt-out without a local vote of the people, then provide a clean mechanism to get that before the people.
Just to respond to that, thank you for the answer. I think the my perspective on it, though, is that Measure 91 was brought to the ballot by signatures of the people, the state of Oregon. It was decided by the people, the state of Oregon. And there were voters in favor and opposed in all areas of the state. To my mind, the opt-out should continue to be the decision of the people of a community, a county, or the state.
And co-chairs and Representative Buckley, I guess my only point is that that provision, I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but that provision of Measure 91 is not exclusive, just like the Oregon Liquor Control Act is not exclusive. So the voters repealed prohibition back in the 30s, as well as, you know, the Liquor Control Act, but there were multiple mechanisms to opt out, that being just one of them. So in Measure 91, it's just one of them, but we know we're going to have to litigate that. So I think there are good legal and policy reasons for you to clean it up, no matter which way you clean it up. Obviously, I have my preference, but to say that Measure 91 provides for only one mechanism of opt-out, based on our legal research, our analysis that I would urge you to read, that's just simply not accurate.
Mr. Winkles and then Representative Helm.
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Buckley, I would also point out that the way the opt-out works requires that the petition be voted on at the November general election. So depending on how we define a general election, and that's somewhat ambiguous, whether it's November of either year, the citizens would be able to vote on this in November of 16. OLCC will be taking license applications in January of 2016. So you could have a scenario where a business is given a license and later on a petition is circulated prior to November of 2016. They're in operation. Changing that timeline, I think, would be beneficial for our parties, because nobody wants to open a business and then get voted out in the next cycle. Additionally, I think if we look at that Kirkland example, and I don't think there's any reason to expect we won't see the same sort of situation here, where Kirkland will have retail marijuana operating in their city, but they have to do quite a bit of code updates and changes and some conditional use permits in order to make that happen. They have a ban that they anticipate lifting, so I don't know that we would, if it makes sense to send an election every time you want to change the ban, if you're working towards a scenario where you will have retail or commercial activities, and that's what we're asking for is flexibility.
So I think Representative Buckley has a follow-up, and then Representative Helm.
Thank you. I appreciate the answer. I think I would counter slightly with the Oregon example around dispensaries. There's a tremendous amount of fear whipped up around what a dispensary would do to a city or community. And in my district, I look at the City of Talent, that's just very quietly opened two dispensaries without problem. Contrast the City of Phoenix, which went through, is still going through huge legal gyrations over the same issue. The fears were not founded. I think actually having a business open up prior to an election might actually allay the fears of citizens about this retail establishment that is down the street, serving people that want to be served, a local business, and not causing any problems, that might actually be something that would be that would have a impact on the vote itself. So I don't think it's necessarily a horrible thing for a business to open before the general election.
So I'm going to go, unless you have a response to that.
I just have one quick thought. Just co-chairs and Representative Buckley, I think we can also look at the Oregon Liquor Control Act to see what happened there. So throughout the 40s and early 50s, many communities opted out through either city council action, county commissioner action, which actually was countywide for reasons I won't bore you with, or by initiative. And then they opted back in. But then over the next 10 years, all those got repealed. Because people observed it working okay, and the nightmare scenarios about alcohol, you know, alcohol, people will go mad and all this other stuff, didn't happen. And I think the same thing is probably likely to happen now. The question is, do you force it before federal prohibition has been repealed, or do you actually allow this to happen in a methodical fashion? And I think the latter is a better way to approach it.
Okay. Then Representative Helm, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. thanks for the memorandum. I'll read it. As to the bill, let me ask you this. Is it your opinion that the vote on ballot measure 91 was a statewide vote, or was it a county-by-county vote?
Co-chairs Representative Helm was clearly a statewide vote.
So the people of this state in total adopted this measure. Could they have a follow-up?
Please. Co-chair,
could we have adopted a statute that allowed county by county an opt-in? So on a county by county basis, the people of that county could opt into legalizing marijuana.
Co-chairs and Representative Helm, that's what we did. The opt-out slash in initiative process is just that. It's much like the Oregon Liquor Control Act.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes, please.
But that's not the way it's configured. It's a statewide vote legalizing with an opt-out for local governments to go dry if they so desire. It's not the reverse.
Co-chairs and Representative Helm, you might want to read that section of Measure 91. It's going dry or wet.
Why do they need to go wet if they already are?
Because, co-chairs Representative Helm, because that was the framework of the Oregon Liquor Control Act of 1933, there were cities that actually opted out, then back in, or in and opted out. And it was a tortured history for about 25 years. And the case law I cite in the legal memo actually talks about some of that and the chaos that was ensuing as a result of it. So if you read that provision of Measure 91, it actually talks about opting in and opting out because it was basically copied verbatim from the Oregon Liquor Control Act of 1933.
Madam Chair, if I can have one more. I think we're going to have to agree to disagree on that. I'm reading this exact same words differently. But the follow-up question I have is this. We talked about this before in terms of statutory interpretation.
Sure.
We're going to go look at the text, we're going to look at the context, and then when that's not clear, which to my mind it isn't here, we're going to go to legislative history. The best legislative history in my mind that we have, and I'm sorry to put you on the spot, but
it's
you
fine.
Told me you liked it.
Sure.
Is the explanatory statement of ballot measure 91, which you probably don't have in front of you right now. But since I tore that section out of my own voter's pamphlet, I have it.
It's actually quoted in the memo here, too.
And the explanatory statement says, a city or county may opt out of having marijuana businesses only by petition signed by 10% of registered voters and approved by a majority of voters at a general election. And then at the bottom, of course, as you know, well know, the committee members are listed. And, of course, you're listed there. And there is an asterisk by folks that did not concur with this statement, and an asterisk isn't by your name.
Right.
So I have to ask, and I'm not asking this to put Mr. Bovet on the spot, but I'm very resistant to having the committee go down this route when it's my view that the explanatory statement is absolutely clear that there is but one way to opt out. And I don't want us to waste time on this if we don't have to. So I have to ask. Mm-hmm. You said one thing back before the election, and now I'm hearing a very complicated and, in my mind, a little bit attenuated legal analysis saying something else.
Co-chairs and Representative Helm, let me address both of those issues you raise. First, the first part of your question, let me give you an example of how I think the opt-in could work and how it did work. So you could have a city opting in, and the citizens disagree. Measure 91 specifically provides for that by allowing a local initiative to disagree with the city and opt out by vote of the people, essentially overriding the city council. Because Measure 91 adopted that same language from the Oregon Liquor Control Act, that same language and the case law attached to it, that's real clear to me that both by initiative petition and city council, you can opt in and out, and Measure 91 allows for that. In terms of the explanatory statement provision, unfortunately, the way that process works is a draft is created, and we argue over certain points. Those points we didn't really argue over, to be honest. We didn't focus on that. And the dissension of those two members of the explanatory committee was about different issues. So, yes, on reflection, I wish I had had all of this information in front of me. But my fear is that we don't get to the legislative history, because the case law tells us if the initiative is clear on its face, you don't get to it. And so I think I'm pretty confident that I'm stuck in court over exactly the issues you and I have been talking about, and I would just rather not be. If you want to preempt local authority and say there shall be no opt-out, I would rather have you say that.
Okay, so
he doesn't agree. Because then you know what's going to happen? We'll be dealing with the nuclear option question. We will be dealing with the federal question that every single other state in the nation has avoided doing because of the serious risk to our entire licensing scheme. And again, I strongly encourage you to talk to legislative council about that. People are minimizing the risk. I don't minimize it. And to me, that represents a potential result in Oregon that would be unique that doesn't make any sense to me. Because what's at risk is the licensing scheme for medical marijuana dispensaries and the four-tiered licensing scheme in Measure 91. What is not at risk are the personal allowance provisions of both of those acts. If I'm right, and of course I think I am, a federal court injunction issues, and what we are left with in Oregon is pure decriminalization.
Thank you so much. Do you feel like you've finished that line of questions? All right, we have a question from Senator Farioli, and then if we have no more questions from the panel, then we may need to transition to the next witnesses. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I sincerely appreciate the differences in perspective, and I'll simply tell you, you'll be debating these questions for the next 25 years. The fact of the matter is that there are very few exclusive remedies offered either in statute or law. So what we have here is a system of checks and balances that recognize that perhaps city councils would feel one way, perhaps city residents would feel another, or jurisdictional residences, and the remedies are built in here. You know, there can be an opportunity for jousting, which is part of our system. It's an adversarial system. But even if a city is overturned by the citizens, a city seeking a ban is overturned by the citizens' initiative, the city still retains the time, place, and manner authority and can say, there is no time, there is no manner, and there is no place, relying on its zoning authority. So it could provide a de facto ban using other authority. So the question is, really, each one of the communities will engage its citizens. And eventually what you have reflected is a community standard. I'm telling my cities, or you know, when I engage with the cities, I try to tell them, If you believe the goal was to prevent or end prohibition, your attempts at a complete ban may foster illicit activity in your community. So if that's your objective, you have to think through the whole cycle. Some cities will opt out. My colleague and I, both of us are the senior members of the Senate who have come in at the same class at the latter part of the last century. We were just discussing the fact that Monmouth, I think, was the last dry city.
Correct.
You know, which came, you know, along into the 21st century just a few years ago. And when you would discuss that issue with the folks in Monmouth, what you would find is a vigorous debate of the pros and cons of maintaining their status as a dry city. We're going to be having this question forever. I don't want to get engaged in how many angels can dance on the head of a pin or what the remedies are. You know, the fact that we have to, is we have a statewide initiative. Half the counties vigorously opposed it. And I can show you where they are on the map. Half the counties agreed that they would impose their will on the rest of the state. But there are non-exclusive remedies that are available to each jurisdiction. And I expect them to pursue their remedies. And regardless of our attempt to try to referee that dust up, they're going to end up in court. So, notwithstanding your desire to stay out of court, forget about that. You're going to go to court. Legislative intent may help, but after you've been here a while, you realize the courts pay very little attention to our interpretations of what we intended when we passed the bill. That's all I have to say about that, Madam Chair. Thanks for
the indulgence. Thank you for that set of insights. I'm sorry, was that? Because anyone can say something really quietly and just totally confuse me. Any other questions for these witnesses? All right, thank you both very much. Next, we'll call up David Fedenke and Doug Hoyer. And I will look forward to you correctly pronouncing your last names so that I can later also.
If you don't get it right, he'll sue you.
And he's not on
a not a chance.
He'll just get you sued.
I answer to anything. For the record, David Fedenke, Executive Director of the ACLU of Oregon, at least till the end of this month. And here testifying today on behalf of the ACLU, I was one of the drafters of Measure 91, but I am not testifying on behalf of New Approach Oregon or any of the other members of that coalition today, solely on behalf of the ACLU. I just want to emphasize a couple of points that have already been very ably made by members of this committee, Madam Co-Chairs. First is that those of us who are involved in the drafting of Measure 91 were trying to adopt a system of regulation of marijuana post-legalization as best we could based on the regulation by the OLCC of alcohol in this state. Our major goal is to eliminate the criminal market for marijuana and replace it with a regulated market in which the product is inexpensive enough to put the criminal market out of business and at the same time generate revenue for the state and localities where this product is cultivated, processed, and sold. And I assume the committee is well aware of this. There are a number of balancing acts in Measure 91, one of which was recognizing that some localities, cities and counties, would make it very difficult for any of these entities to locate within their boundaries That was the reason for inserting the word reasonable along with time, place, and manner regulations. And the other safeguard was to ensure that at least after the first year, any municipality or county in which there were no facilities would not receive any of the tax revenue that was generated by the regulated market. And I think everyone needs to understand, I think all of you understand this very well. Certainly the comments made by Senator Farioli underscored it. There is an illegal market currently in every municipality and county in this state. You all have decisions to make this session about where you think the balance should be between continuing to encourage that criminal market versus trying to put it out of business. Clearly, prohibition has not worked to prevent the illegal cultivation, processing, and sale of marijuana. And, you know, we felt that it would be more protective of minors to have a regulated system rather than a criminal system. We felt that it would be better for every locality in this state to encourage the adoption of, bringing this market out into the open, where all can see it and where it can be regulated. At the same time, we recognized that not every locality was going to be in favor of this. And so we provided that opt-out ability in the measure. If you all, in your wisdom, decide there needs to be some additional measures put in place that allow local governments and their citizens to opt out, we hope you will think very carefully about how you craft that. Again, because it's a choice between encouraging the criminal market and opening the door to eliminating that criminal market. So I appear in opposition to Senate Bill 542 today, and I wish you all the best in your deliberations as this session continues. I'm sure I'll be back before my time is up, and possibly even after, on the staff of the ACLU. But I appreciate how difficult some of these issues are. And believe me, those of us who were involved in the drafting wrestled with these very same issues when we were in that process.
Thank you.
Co-chairs, member of the committee, my name is Doug Boyer, and you did get that name right. I live in a city that's placed a full moratorium. They've enacted the tax, and now they're currently looking at a code change to ban the facilities from the downtown area. Senate Bill 542 is really, to me, a direct front to the voters and will prevent or impede the uniform application over the state's control over regulating marijuana. Now, the League of City Voters enlisted the cities around Oregon to violate the intent of Measure 91 by assisting them with creating ordinances that circumvent the will of Measure 91. This is reprehensible. So when the House Bill 3460 passed, the League of Oregon Cities helped craft 1531 to allow some cities to have a temporary exemption from this bill. And so the city of Newburgh, where I live, chose to place a moratorium and ended up losing the business that I had. The city further placed a tax, and in doing so, they recognized right in the measure that they were going against the will of the voters when they did that. So I'm hoping that this committee helps the state take control of this and so we have a uniform application of these laws. Thank you.
Any questions for these witnesses?
Not a question, Madam Chair, but a comment, if I may. Mr. Fedanke, I've very much appreciated your service to the citizens of Oregon and that of ACLU. I find myself frequently in agreement with your organization's position, although that may come as a major surprise to some of the organization's supporters, but your service has been exemplary, and I genuinely appreciate what you've done individually, personally, and from the organizational standpoint. This may be the last opportunity I have to acknowledge your service publicly. I don't know if you'll be back before this or another committee, but I wanted to thank you for what you've been doing.
Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Well, thank you both very much. And next up, let's please have Amy Smith, Avoy Smith, and Teresa Marchetti, both of the City of Portland. I think I got that wrong. But
you're doing
we're
great, man.
Very happy to see you.
Good evening, co-chairs and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Andy Smith for the City of Portland, and with me today is Teresa Marchetti. She's the Livability Programs Manager for the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. Her office is charged with working to build safe and livable communities and neighborhoods. Senate Bill 542 contains several policy areas of interest for the City of Portland. First is the issue of local revenues. The City of Portland passed a 10% tax on the sale of marijuana ahead of the passage of Measure 91. And Portland did this because the emerging recreational marijuana market will require the city to play a significant role in both ensuring a smooth implementation of Measure 91 and a reasonable enforcement of the law. We anticipate expenses that exceed projected state revenues. Implementation will require increased demands on our police officers, fire and building inspectors, licensing officials, and neighborhood livability program. Even under the current revenue sharing formula in Measure 91, funds sent to local governments are designated for public safety, even though the local services impacted by implementation are much broader than that. Second is the issue of licensing. Licensees under Measure 91 should have to demonstrate as a condition of licensing that they are in compliance with local zoning, building, and fire code. Under the Liquor Control Act, licensees do not have to be in compliance with local laws in order to get a liquor license. And the result is that local governments have little say or input on where licensed establishments are located and are limited in their ability to protect the public health, safety, and livability. Addressing this issue would help local communities be responsive to and address unique conditions that may differ from jurisdiction to jurisdiction that a uniform regulatory system cannot address. We encourage this committee to take a close look at this issue as it applies to Measure 91. And finally, the issue of saturation. Saturation refers to a concentration of licensed establishments in a given area. The Liquor Control Act does not address the issue of saturation, but in Portland, we struggle with areas of the city that are densely concentrated with licensed establishments and the associated public safety and livability issues that arise in these areas. We encourage this committee to extend the rule in the medical marijuana laws that require dispensaries to be 1,000 feet from each other to licensed establishments under Measure 91. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and we are happy to answer any questions.
Yes, for the record, I'm Teresa Marchetti, Chairs Leininger and Burdick. As Andy said, I'm the Office of Neighborhood Involvement's Livability Manager. And just to expand a little bit on what Andy said, the City of Portland is really looking to be an effective partner with whatever the state licensing scheme is. And we do expect like liquor licensing to be the location that has the most retail dispensaries. And we're trying to educate ourselves, much like I know this committee has been trying as well, on what the issues will be that arise that we need to address from the local standpoint. And even though there is we understand the desire to have a uniform statewide approach, there are certain environmental factors that a uniform approach isn't necessarily the best way to address from a coastal community to a rural community to an urban community. And so we're hoping that we will have an opportunity to work with you to alleviate some of those issues so that the city does have the authority to be responsive to our constituents and their concerns as they arise as we are implementing this and encouraging this industry.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Thank you for your testimony. I'm wondering, Andy, if there's a way that the City of Portland could look at the cost incurred in the opening of the dispensaries in your city and somehow get that information to us so that we have some idea of a projection of what the costs might be when retail establishments open. I know there will be a lot of interest in your city for people who want to open retail. And that would be helpful, at least for the committee to have.
Sure. Co-chairs and Representative Buckley, we'd be happy to provide that.
Absolutely.
Any other questions for these witnesses? Okay, thank you both so much. Appreciate it. We have two more witnesses signed up to testify to Senate Bill 542. Peter Kramer, possibly, and Anthony Johnson.
Pretty simple.
You could both come to the front. That would be great.
Yep.
You may begin. Thank you.
Well, let Anthony say, my name is Peter Kramer, and now I'll let Anthony speak, and now I'll speak after him.
You know, you're above him on the list.
Okay.
So.
Well, then excuse me, Anthony. Well, I'm a medical marijuana patient, grower, activist. I get to get the camera and film these things and show the city of Salem on Channel 23 what's happening, for them to make their own decisions or opinions. I'm glad that the medical marijuana finally got a safe access to get that, and this was voted by the public.
Big time.
Like 91 has been voted by the public. And you told us when we got 91 going that you wouldn't mess with the medical. There's several bills that are messing with the medical thing. I'm just here to say thanks for Dr. Lebeck for helping us and with all your help. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here. Mr. Johnson.
Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee, Anthony Johnson with New Approach Oregon, chief petitioner, one of the co-authors along with Dave Fedenke of Measure 91, I guess also known as the Robovey and Chardonnay Full Employment Act after today. I completely concur with everything that Dave Fedenke said, so I won't go over all those points, and I think he said it best about getting rid of the black market and adhering to the will of the voters. I don't see how changing how cities or counties can opt out changes the debate at the federal law debate, the federal issue. And I encourage people to look at Willis v. Winters, which is a Oregon Supreme Court case, and I'm happy to share it with everyone. And that's a case where in Jackson County, a medical marijuana patient was denied a concealed handgun license because she admitted to being a medical marijuana patient. And a local sheriff did not want to issue a concealed handgun license because it violated federal law and said, I'm preempted from issuing this license because under federal law, you cannot possess a firearm because you're an unlawful drug user. The Oregon Supreme Court held that we hold that the Federal Gun Control Act does not preempt the state's concealed handgun licensing statute, and therefore the sheriffs must issue or renew the requested licenses. The counties appealed this case to the United States Supreme Court. The United States Supreme Court refused to hear it. So I think if there are any issues with Measure 91, the licensing aspects, the county opt-in or opt-out, and I think the campaign, the explanatory statement, it's been pretty clear it's an opt-out procedure, but if you're going to go any way about it, I think you should go the way to explicitly state that state law does reign supreme and that the local communities cannot tax or opt out unless it's by a vote of the people. I think the people spoke loud and clear, and one of the beauties of our system is that if there are any issues about the revenue division or any aspects of Measure 91, we can address those on down the road. But in the meantime, let's let the will of the voters be enacted, and let's keep it an opt-out procedure. And I appreciate your time very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Anthony, could you, and forgive me, I'm running a little late tonight, but I wanted to ask you, what kind of law enforcement problems do you see occurring around a retail establishment? And is there anything to be learned from the experience with dispensaries to this point?
Madam Co-Chairs, Co-Vice Chair Wilson, I encourage everyone to, and I can be happy to send data to everyone on the committee, look at what's happened with medical marijuana dispensaries all across the country. We now have 23 states, half the country's population, living with medical marijuana. And we have medical marijuana dispensaries here. California's had dispensaries since 1997, I believe. You look at what's happened in Colorado and Washington already. We can look in our own communities, and I think you can see that the sky doesn't fall, the crime rate doesn't increase, and that dispensaries are no more likely to be robbed, definitely, than a bank or a pharmacy or any other really business in the area. And so, and oftentimes they actually can revitalize areas and improve the situation in local communities. So I see actually number of arrests, citations actually decreasing, and that we'll have increased revenue, create jobs, and that you will not see an increased crime in our communities. And I think that's played out all across the country.
Thanks. Any other questions for this panel? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening.
All right. With that, I am going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 542 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 460. So, Mr. Crawford, if you could summarize that bill and the Dash 1 amendment, that would be great. And then we're going to invite Senator Przanski to kick us off as a speaker when you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 460 directs the Oregon Health Authority to adopt rules providing for the relocation of a medical marijuana facility, including all usable marijuana and immature marijuana plants in the facility's possession. It further allows a medical marijuana facility to remain at a current location until the date of registration renewal if a school is established within 1,000 feet of the location. It declares an emergency and is effective on passage. The committee is asked to consider the Dash 1 amendment. The Dash 1 amendment replaces the measure. It allows a medical marijuana facility to remain at the current location until the date of registration renewal if the school is established within 1,000 feet of the location. It declares an emergency and is effective on passage.
Okay. Well, welcome, Senator. Please introduce yourself for the record and share what you'd like us to know.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to bring forward Senate Bill 461. As Mr. Crawford said, we are asking the committee to look at the Dash 1 amendments.
I'm going to ask you to jump in and introduce yourself for the record, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Floyd Przanski, State Senator, District 4, includes parts of Lane and Douglas counties. Regarding Senate Bill 460, the reason it came forward, myself and co-chief sponsor Representative Buckley, when we put together House Bill 3640, apparently we had an oversight as to what we thought we had covered, and it turned out that we had not. And there was basically there was never our intent to force an established business, once it was established, licensed, and up and running, to be closed down based on the school relocating or being established within 1,000 feet of that existing operating medical marijuana facility. Because of that, I asked LC to put together Senate Bill 460, and unfortunately in my communications with them, I did not make it clear to them that this should be an outright grandfathering, in other words, allowing the business that had established itself to not be forced out at any time. And so that's why myself and I, speaking for Representative Buckley, are asking the committee to consider the concept of the Dash 1. We understand that based on the work of this committee, that more than likely we will have a larger or multiple bills that will be omnibus bills that will have different sections to it. And so this is why we're presenting this concept to the committee tonight. The other thing that I think is very important is that, as ironic as it may seem, on last Thursday when we had City Hall Day, one of my mayors that came up to visit was the mayor from Veneta, Sandra Larson, and she has provided written testimony, which is on OLIS. And so I asked the committee to look at her testimony because she asked me, she said, we have a medical marijuana facility, only one that's in the city of Veneta. They're located at what was known as the main shopping area, commerce area in Veneta, which is located basically at Territorial Road and Highway 126 West. And she said that they were very concerned that that business was going to be forced to move or shut down because there's now a school that has been housed over at a technical school at the learning, the West Lane Technical Learning Center, located at the high school, has been given notice that they can no longer use the space at the high school because the high school needs it for other classes. So they've been in the process of attempting to locate a place that would be large enough for their learning center, and it's a charter school, and they've decided and they've worked out that they could have a occupancy at the same shopping center as where the medical marijuana facility is located. She has stated, and it's called out in her testimony that's written, and as I said, that's part of the OLIS system, that they have been very good neighbors. They have done everything they're supposed to do, and they have not had any instances within about 1 year since they have come up and running. She's also stated that based on her discussions with the young entrepreneurs that have invested over $50,000 in that facility, personal savings plus business loans, and that they find that they, one, want to stay at that location. They made the investment because that was their plan to stay there and not to have to relocate. She goes on to state that it would be very difficult for them to relocate based on the market model plan that this business has. And I would say, where have we required any business that is up and running and established and not having any problems be forced to move just because someone decides to relocate a school in the same general area knowing that the facility is already there and basically displacing them? So it was never our intent to put businesses out of business based on having a school come in after House Bill 3640 passed to locate with or without intention within 1,000 feet of an existing medical marijuana facility.
Okay, thank you. Questions for this witness, Co-Chair Burdick.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Can we assume that you would support this same policy when we approve recreational marijuana facilities?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, very much. This is dealing, of course, with the medical, but this committee, as we know, is charged to look at a much broader and bigger picture as it pertains to Measure 91, as well as, I think, as helping clean up some of the situations that were unintended consequences in House Bill 3640.
Yeah, just a comment, Madam Chair. It seems like we would to not do this would almost get into the takings area for a government decision. If you forced a business that was existing out of business simply because some other entity moved in.
I would say that I'm not Madam Co-Chairs, I'm not ready to comment as to legality and what that might be as a taking. But what I would say is that we have not seen any similar actions based on the location of a liquor store. And it's ironic when you look at her statement in her testimony, she actually talks about a liquor store which is in the same shopping center, which is, again, within 1,000 feet of where the school is going to be relocated.
Thank you.
Great. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. All right, we have two witnesses from the community who are here to talk. So we have Anthony Johnson and Peter Kramer. Welcome back up, gentlemen. This time we have you in reverse order. So, Anthony, Mr. Johnson, let's have you go first. Mr. Kramer can do the finale.
Madam Co-Chairs, member of the committee, Anthony Johnson, New Approach, Oregon. I concur with everything that Senator Przanski said, and in addition to the fact that this would be a great fix for Measure 91 adult use stores as well, it's nice to know we're not alone in oversights in these issues. So thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. My name is Pete Kramer. I'm from the Mercy Center. I run the Mercy TV. I'm here and I agree with Anthony and Senator. Let's make it legal.
Great. Any questions, comments? Senator Cruz, you got anything? All right. Anybody else? All right. Thank you very much. So we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 460 and open the final public hearing of the evening on House Bill 2041. Mr. Crawford, could you please summarize the bill?
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2041 allows local governments to adopt ordinances prohibiting marijuana producers, processors, wholesalers, or retailers from establishing within 1 mile of public or private schools. It allows local governments to adopt ordinances prohibiting medical marijuana facilities from establishing within 1 mile of public or private schools, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage. It has no revenue impact, but no fiscal impact statement has been issued.
All right, we have two witnesses signed up for that bill. We have Peter Kramer and Anthony Johnson. Welcome.
It's a sweep.
Right. Obviously in support, huh?
What's our order this time?
Time, it looks like we've got Peter up. Welcome.
This don't mess with the medical marijuana.
What's that?
It took us a long time to get PSD put out as a condition. You gotta be joking. 12 inches, you call that a mature plant? I'll be at the OMMP meeting this next Tuesday. Yeah. To film it.
Greg?
So if you watch, get on the computer, you can watch us bring that meeting to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, Greg.
Thank you for your help and taking your time.
Thanks very much.
Anthony Johnson, New Approach, Oregon again. Speaking in opposition of this bill, it's really already been said before about Senate Bill 542. We want to bring people into a regulated system, let the will of the voters speak. 1,000 feet is sufficient to protect minors, to adhere to the Cole memo, and federal provisions to keep the marijuana establishments away from kids. A mile provision will be a burden upon patients, first and foremost, and additionally, it will only exacerbate the illegal market, and we should let the will of the voters speak before we make any major changes. So please oppose this bill.
All right, thank you. Hey, everybody, it sounds like there's a lot of ideas down at this end of the dais. You got anything you want to
say? So we had a question.
Share with everyone, Senate. Yeah. Yeah, come on.
Yeah. Yes, Senator Przanski.
Yeah, Senator Cruz and I apologize while the speakers were speaking, but we looked to see who was the proponent because it sounds like from what you said on the witness list, there was only two signed up. And I was wondering, as apparently Representative Smith was the requester of the bill. I'm wondering if he or had a constituent or someone has submitted any testimony on behalf of the bill.
Yeah, you know, what I have a note here that he would not be available to testify, but Mr. Crawford, do you have any more insight into that?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Przanski, at this point we've received no testimony in favor of this bill.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, we're also commenting on the mile distance, which would mean that there would be nothing in the state, I think. So.
Great. Any other thoughts on this? Well, thank you, gentlemen, for your input tonight. And
Madam Chair?
Yes, sir.
Before you let everybody go home, which is a good thing. I don't want to impede that too much. I have a question on 542 that I think will help the committee, at least it will help me. And I'd like to ask for Mr. Bovet to answer a question.
And I'm going to close the public hearing on 2041, and then let's go to that question. So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2041. And Mr. Bovet, we would love to have you answer this question.
I get, Madam Co-Chair, I guess I should have left.
Also, pardon me, I'm going to reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 542.
Yeah, it'll teach you. So it seems, though, that your previous testimony on the structure of Oregon state law, absent Measure 91, is that even with Measure 91, there are multiple remedies for and multiple authorities for cities. You testified, I believe, that cities and counties have the authority to opt out absent any provision within Measure 91, but they have a specific mechanism that's also spelled out in Measure 91, but none of those are exclusive remedies. So I'd like you to put that statement on the record. So if there's a discrepancy, we can hammer that out with legislative counsel to either get agreement or disagreement.
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Farioli, I would absolutely agree with what you just said in terms of an alternate
Madam
summary.
Chair, I don't know what I just said. That's why he's up there.
Sign the diet tape while you're listening.
So with all due deference to the crafters of House Bill 3460, and Measure 91, it's my legal analysis that's shared by the League of Oregon Cities that we, in fact, have all rights of opt-out under existing law. But we concede that we're going to wind up litigating those things if you don't change the statute to clarify that. There's also a backup argument that even if you do affirmatively preempt us or a court decides and disagrees with what I just said, that federal law trumps. And my fear is, my concern is, that we don't really want to reach the federal question because we don't want the answer. So my goal is, if I have to litigate it, I want to win in court on state arguments because I don't want to reach the federal question until the feds get rid of prohibition.
And Madam Chair, just a quick follow-up.
Sure.
Thank you for stating that. I guess, Madam Chair, the only further question I would have is, that the SMS on 526 should reflect or refute that statement, so we'll know whether the opt-out provisions are exclusive to Measure 91 or not exclusive to Measure 91 according to our legal counsel. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Madam Co-Chairs, I would agree with Senator Farioli. You really ought to ask legislative counsel to see whether they agree with our analysis. Please don't trust us.
I'm glad, Madam Chair. I'm glad, Madam Chair, you didn't say with your analysis. That's a different part of the bill.
So I see that the committee administrator is writing down that point, and then Senator Przanski had a comment, and then Co-Chair Burdick.
Well, since you've come back up, the one thing that you said in your testimony that I wanted to get clarification was that if the feds did rule on this and they did agree with your analysis, we would be left with only personal use and protections. Was that correct?
Co-chairs and Senator Przanski, that's exactly correct. So really there's two pieces of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act and two pieces of Measure 91. Just talk about 91. 91 has the personal allowance provisions, what I can have at my home, what I can grow at my home, free from being a crime under state law. I would agree with, and I haven't seen anybody give any legal analysis that is at any risk of being preempted federally. It's beyond the reach of Congress to tell you what you can criminalize or decriminalize under state law. The risk is on the licensing schemes. And states have carefully avoided having their licensing schemes be preempted by federal law by ensuring local opt-out. And so that's where I see the risk, and I suspect, without knowing, that legislative counsel will agree with me that there is a substantial risk of all of our licensing schemes being preempted and subject to a federal injunction That is on the dispensary side in the Medical Marijuana Act, as well as the four-tiered licensing. People may not like to hear that message. Frankly, I don't like that message either, because I think that's the worst of all possible worlds, because then what would we would be left with is the core of 91 and the core of the Medical Marijuana Act, which I would characterize as pure decriminalization under state law with no licensing, taxation, or regulation.
So if I could just follow up, if that if that occurs, it's still illegal under the federal system to grow, to distribute, and so why wouldn't they still have some type of jurisdiction over people in this state? And that analysis just doesn't seem to understand the licensing part, but if you go purely on a criminal analysis, I just don't understand how we can say that it's going to be legal in the state to do these things that are still currently under federal law illegal.
And co-chairs and Senator Brzezinski, that's the real rub. I guess I would encourage you to read the Michigan Supreme Court case in the case of Terbeek, where, for example, the city tried to prohibit the personal allowance provisions of the Michigan Medical Marijuana Act, which is basically the OMMA. They copied our statute. And the state Supreme Court said the city can't do that because the state legislature gave criminal immunity. That's the personal allowance provisions. And the 10th Amendment case law is clear. Nothing that Congress does can tell you as a state legislature what you can and cannot criminalize under state law. You have that authority exclusively. If the feds choose not to enforce federal law, against individual users, which they're never going to do, that's federal. That's essentially a prosecutorial discretion. But the feds can't control what you criminalize and decriminalize under state law. That's safe, in my opinion, and I think legislative counsel will agree with me, totally safe. What's totally at risk are licensing schemes that essentially are state licenses to commit a federal crime. And people may not, again, like to hear that, but that's essentially what they are.
But, Rob, if I may,
sure,
I'm just
please.
Following up again on this. It just seems to me that if everything's intrastate, not interstate, the licensing scheme is within our state. It seems like the 10th Amendment is going to give us the same protection as it does for the criminal.
And co-chairs and Senator Brzezinski, I guess I would point you to Emerald Steel to answer that question, where we're talking about totally activities in state under state law where someone was being forced to accept an answer that functionally violated federal law. Mm. It's the difference between Emerald Steel and Willis v. Winters that Anthony talked about. In Willis v. Winters, there was no federal conflict. Essentially, the sheriffs tried to manufacture one. And so it may sound like a distinction without function, but it actually is real. It's real. When you box someone into a corner and tell them they have to tolerate or accept or license that which is a federal crime, then you run into what I call the potential nuclear option.
So I see Senator Burdick has a question. Senator Cruz, do you feel like your question is
It's kind of a follow-up on this. I mean, once we get into licensing, does that take us into the Commerce Clause? Is that where we get wrapped or not?
Co-Chair Senator Cruz, no, not really. What we're really analyzing is federal preemption and the reach of federal preemption. So the feds, because marijuana is a Schedule I controlled substance banned, there is nothing about that fact that preempts your authority to grant citizens of this state immunity from state criminal law.
Right.
The feds can't touch that. That's the heart of the Medical Marijuana Act, and that's the heart of Measure 91. But the Medical Marijuana Act has accessories, things like licensing dispensaries, right. Licensing for categories of businesses. That can be federally preempted.
Yeah, let me ask that.
So, Senator, Co-Chair Burdick.
Thank you. Along those lines, if you're, and I'm hearing and trying to understand what you're saying about the licensing, and you're basically saying if we compel an activity that is against federal law, that you consider us to be at risk. If you satisfied your concerns and allowed opt-out in a realistic way, but had incentives for cities or counties to cite these things. For example, perhaps a capped local option tax. Would that run into the same legal perils?
Madam Co-Chair, I don't think so. I think you, I mean, frankly, under state law, you can incentivize people to tolerate or even license the commission of federal crimes. I don't think that's subject to the same analysis. The difference is really between compelling people to do things that facilitate or license a federal crime versus immunizing people from your own state criminal law. Those are the extremes. And then, you know, Council Mayor, Mark Mayer, talked originally about everything else being gray in between. And I see it that way as well. I share that sliding scale. And to me, licensing is the most risky activity we can do, to license someone to commit a federal crime. That's what's subject to being preempted, which is why, in my opinion, all other states have avoided that issue entirely by making sure that nobody is forced to accept a licensee.
So, you know, I think you made an important comment at the beginning, which is that you represent your client. There are a number of lawyers up here. We know that these are cases of first impression in large measure, and you are a great advocate for your client, but you have a very distinct point of view from which you're analyzing the law. And we really appreciate your encouragement to us that we have counsel for the legislature provide us with perspectives on this. And I would just reiterate that this is a case of first impression, and the case law that we have on it is state court interpretations of federal law, and so there's a lot to be determined. But thank you so much, and there are no more questions on this hearing. I'm going to close the hearing for Senate Bill 542, and let you know that the next thing that we have going is going to be the presentation from the Oregon Liquor Control Commission on Monday, in which they're going to speak us through the recommendations that they have come to, and we'll have a chance to do a lot of question and answer on that. And I think that we expect that to take up the entirety of the session on Monday. We invite you back to take a look then. So thanks a lot, and with that, the meeting is adjourned. The meeting is adjourned. Andy and I are going to law school next year.